Even the substitute teacher is dead in Iran as the de facto leader is now confirmed deceased after recent attacks. Even the schools are getting hit hard by the flu bug going around, and today there is no school at one elementary in West Fargo. Yes, it's that bad. And even grandmas and grandpas can help teach our kids about how to deal with this crazy world around us, says one speaker coming to Fargo at the end of the month. Good morning, my friend. Great to be with you here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. It is what they're telling us will be the last cold day of this extended snap of crazy winter weather coming our way here in mid-March. And that sounds good to me. I've seen the forecast for this weekend, pretty much around the entire region here. I keep tabs on the weather in north central Minnesota because we do business over there, over in Grand Rapids. I also watch things in the Bakken because we've got friends and business partners out there as well. Certainly in Fargo as well. My son is in the Twin Cities, so I'm keeping an eye on what's going on there. And I can tell you that everybody, it looks like, is going to participate in the upcoming fun. The March Madness maybe is done as far as storms and cold weather. And by the end of the week, it sounds like we're going to be thinking golf. And so I am all for all of that. Hope that you're having a good day, my friend, whether your day is just starting, just finishing, or somewhere in between. So thankful that you chose to make this a part of your morning. I continue to get emails and texts from people who say, hey, I love hearing you in the mid-morning. It's great to get my day started and be able to catch some of the most important stuff going on, and that means an awful lot to me. Work hard on this show every day, trying to make sure that we are giving you a fair trade for your time. We know there's a lot of things you could be doing with your time. A lot of you are multitasking while you are hearing this show. That's absolutely cool. We'll take whatever time and whatever attention span you're able to give to us. If you're in the truck or the tractor driving between places today, thank you very much, my friend. It means a lot to have you along for the ride as well. My producer, Addison Leger, the guy who does all the work behind the glass so I can have all the fun with you, is reported for duty once again today. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I was worried you were going to say I do all the work. That's not true.
Yeah, a good share of it. Yep, I do the talking, you do the doing, and it works out pretty good. So,
I think I like the split of work we both do.
We will take it. We make a good team, yes. All right, let's get to it here with the Morning Wire. There is a lot going on here today, and especially in the markets. I've been waiting for the stock market to kind of do this downside to the up that we usually have. Lately, it's been up a day, down a day, up a day, down a day. Or even more recently, it's been up for a couple hours, down for a couple hours. But we are off to a strong start today in the financial markets. Interesting development there. Maybe it signals that the traders know something, or it certainly does signal that there is some optimism that this particular war in Iran will not be a long-lasting war. I think that's true, too. But I think for a while now, I've been sitting back going, gosh, this feels like it might be a little longer thing than I thought it might be. So let's get to it here. Some automatic storylines going rapid fire to give you a rundown on what is happening in the world around us. I will tell you this on the almanac. Record high for Fargo again today is 76 for the second straight day. It was 76 degrees on this day in 2012. It was 76 yesterday on March 16th in 2012. We must have had a nice stretch of weather back then. Record low minus 17. Average high is 37 here in Fargo, where I am at today. We will gain 3 minutes and 22 seconds of daylight today across the central time zone. Very excited for all of that. In the markets, the Dow off to another very strong start to the trading day, up 350. S&P 500 up 42. NASDAQ up 135. WTI crude oil, though, is up as well, pushing over $95 a barrel today on the WTI price. And it's just a whole supply question right now. Nobody really knows how the global supply is going to be impacted by what's happening over there in the Middle East. Gold today up $17 an ounce at $5,019. Silver up 71 cents at $81.40. Yeah, we'd all be buying silver today if it was $8, right? Bitcoin today unchanged from where it was yesterday, down about $300 or so at about $74,000. AAA says average price of a gallon of regular unleaded is $3.79 across the country. North Dakota average price $3.27. South Dakota $3.29. Minnesota $3.43. I remember when gas was $2.05, maybe a month ago, now generally $3.20. So we're up over a dollar a gallon on gas here in the Fargo-Moorhead, West Fargo area. You can find a little more, a little less here and there, depending on where you shop. But overall, we've had a kick in the shorts as far as gas prices, no question about that. All right, let's get to some of the stories making headlines here in the news cycle today. I'm going to start with the war in Iran because I think it's where we should start when you talk about the most important news stories. I have two for you. Number one, no more fatalities confirmed by CENTCOM today over the last 24 hours. Praise God for that. Second of all, the Israeli defense minister has confirmed that Ali Larijani, the secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, has been taken out in an overnight airstrike near Tehran. He was the de facto leader of the country after the Ayatollah had been killed. The son, we're still not really sure where he's at, but the guy that was running the military operation has apparently been taken out by Israeli defense forces. So that's the big story there. All right, a little closer to home, Fargo City Commission had an executive session last night to hear from the city attorney about a potential lawsuit from Angela Lips. She is the former, grandma from Arkansas or someplace that was linked by artificial intelligence tracking to have been named a suspect on a shoplifting crime or theft crime in Fargo. Ended up spending 5 months in jail there. The attorney provided the board with some confidential guidance on how to proceed with a possible settlement versus litigation. No formal vote was taken in last night. More of just a, you know, what the heck are we going to do kind of a thing here. I will mention to you that there is a GoFundMe account that listener Flo sent over to me earlier today and said, Steve, I know you've been talking about this. If people don't know, please remind them that there is a GoFundMe there for this poor woman from Tennessee. That's where she was, Tennessee. All you have to do is go to GoFundMe and search innocent grandmother, and you'll come to it right away. So thank you, Flo. We have mentioned that, but it's great to be reminded again. I think it's something that a lot of people are definitely interested in. So thank you for reminding us of that. Following the retirement notice from Chief Zabolski, Fargo City Commission is discussing the timeline for hiring a permanent replacement. City Administrator Michael Redlinger tells Valley News Live that they are hoping to have a new full-time chief in place by August, and he is also expected to recommend Assistant Chief Travis Stefanowicz to be the official interim police chief. So it sounds like those things are going on there at City Hall. WDAY Radio reports that Freedom Elementary in West Fargo will be closed today. St. Patrick's Day. The kids can't get together and wear their green shirts. The district says they've had an unprecedented surge in staff illness, and there is not enough staff or substitutes to cover the classrooms. All extracurricular activities at the school are also canceled for the day. North Dakota State Capitol reports Valley News Live was abruptly closed yesterday and evacuated following a bomb threat. It was delivered via email to several state agencies. Highway patrol and bomb squads did a little sweep of the building. No evidence was found there. Meanwhile, in Minnesota, Alpha News reports that a report came out yesterday alleging the Walz administration failed to produce a legally mandated Medicaid eligibility report. Under state law, the Department of Human Services is required to provide the data to the legislature regarding the eligibility status of about 1.5 million residents on the program. This could be a paragraph 10 story for me. So Minnesota's got about 5.5 million people in the state. And there's 1.5 million people on Medicaid in the state of Minnesota. That's like one out of every four people. Very fishy, if you ask me. Republican lawmakers are calling for the audit. Gee, I wonder why. Claiming that the missing report hides potential waste and ineligible enrollment that could be costing taxpayers millions. That could be story of the day today. My goodness. And Applied Digital says it's eyeing an expansion of its footprint in North Dakota. Wes Cummins, the CEO, says they have a location north of Bismarck they would like to develop. Now, that area, north of Bismarck, has also been suggested by Governor Armstrong. He told us that here a couple weeks ago as a possible new data center location. Cummins says a specific location has not been named, but the project could bring more than $500 million in capital investment. So we will see what happens there. When we come back, story of the day. It could get very interesting in the Senate chambers today in D.C. The SAVE Act takes center stage, but it might not look like business as usual. Need a new garage door or a fast, reliable repair? I got just the folks for you. On Track Garage Door, they've got you covered. They specialize in commercial, residential, and farm shop doors, plus expert spring replacements and door repairs. On Track Garage Door is proud to be veteran-friendly and grounded in strong Christian values. Quality work, honest service, and a team you can trust. Let them get you on the right track with On Track. Call them at 701-793-4246 today. 793-4246, 793-4246. That's On Track Garage Door. 20 past the hour, the Save America Act takes center stage in Washington, D.C. today. Could be a very interesting day and could be a very long day. This is President Trump's push to completely reshape voting as dictated by the federal government. Usually the states handle voting, but this would federalize it if they can get enough votes to do that. And the president is, of course, on a collision course with Democrats on this one, but also with some Republicans as well. The Save America Act would require people to show documented proof of citizenship when registering to vote, and then showing ID at the time of voting as well. Senate Republicans, many of them are saying that the push to strengthen the bill by adding some of these provisions, no excuse absentee voting being eliminated and things like that, has not sat well with some of their colleagues in areas where a lot of people vote remotely by mail because they are remote and they don't want to drive an hour and a half to the polling place. Senators Tom Tillis and Lisa Murkowski, a couple of Republicans, have already signaled that they will not go ahead with the legislation, and it's thought that Mitch McConnell from Kentucky, John Curtis from Utah are also very skeptical about this whole thing. I'm reading some analysis here from thehill.com today, and one Republican senator told them anonymously that the president's call to eliminate most absentee voting is problematic. He said in some of these states, 60 or 70% of people vote by mail, and you don't want to disenfranchise them. Some states have really even encouraged it over the years. Montana and Utah, he points to specifically. So what do we do with this whole thing right here? Well, there is a way to do this that is orderly, and then there is a way to do this where it seems like a end around. And it might be very interesting today. I was watching Laura Ingraham's show last night, and she had Mike Lee, the senator from Utah, on, and they were talking about how this all might take place here coming up today in the Senate chambers.
That word leaked earlier today, Senator, that Trump allies are planning a floor takeover. Now, what does that mean? I assume that's you. What does that mean, and how will that make it more likely that this becomes law?
I have absolutely no idea what a floor takeover means. But if a floor takeover means that we're going to make filibustering senators speak against this bill, heck yeah, I'm all for it. Let's do it. Let's take over the floor. I saw that phrase in a headline just a little while ago. I'm still confused as to what it means. But if it means enforce the talking filibuster, I'm all in.
Well, John Thune's not going to do it, right? Or he doesn't have the votes to do it, he claims. So what now? I mean, President Trump is very frustrated. I was at the White House today. He's very frustrated by this. He thinks it's critical for Republican chances in the midterms and also 2028. I agree with him. So, again, he doesn't have the votes. He doesn't have 60 votes. What do you need to change the rule here and enforce the talking filibuster? Do you need to change the rule?
No rule change is required. No rule change whatsoever is required.
Okay, so Thune has said on the record to The Hill that he doesn't want to force Democrats to wage the talking filibuster, which would require them to hold the floor with continuous debate to block the bill. So what you heard Laura Ingraham talking about that then is if Thune is not going to do that, then there is no path forward on this unless the Republicans can somehow convince 7 or 8 Democrats to vote for the legislation, which I just don't see any way that that happens. I'm no political expert, but I mean, you know what things are like in D.C. Chuck Schumer has already said that all the Democrats are going to oppose this when it comes up. So for the last 50 years, the Senate has mostly used the silent filibuster, and that's basically if 41 senators just threaten to block a bill since you got to get to 60, the majority leader puts it in a drawer and moves on. Nobody has to stand up and talk. The floor takeover that they're talking about here is an attempt to go back to the old school politics. If you remember the Mr. Smith Goes to Washington movie back in the day. So the goal, if Mike Lee is going to head up some effort there, would be to make the Democrats basically stay on the floor. They can't sit down. They can't leave to eat, use the restroom. They got to keep talking. And Lee is trying to make the opposition visible. Just trying to flesh out, okay, who are the ones who are saying no to this? And at any point, the filibustering senators stop talking or leave the floor, the presiding officer can call the question. And if that happens, the 60-vote requirement can sometimes be bypassed and allow the bill to pass with a simple majority of 51 votes. It's been passed in the House. They've gotten it done already, but it's been stuck in the Senate. They've got this 60% rule there. And with the midterms approaching, I think it's a good strategy to put Democrats on the record. I want to see how Amy Klobuchar votes on this one. She wants to be the governor of Minnesota. Okay. Okay, Amy. 70, 75, 80% of the people in your state, whatever the number is in Minnesota, want this to happen. So if this takeover happens and we do get the kind of talking filibuster, we could get a marathon session that could go through the night, several days, maybe even into the weekend there. The real drama here is what happens with the Republicans, because the Democrats always seem to line up in single file and do what they're told when it comes to governing. Republicans, maybe it's a good thing, maybe it's a bad thing, but it's a thing. Republicans tend to have their own ideas, and they don't all line up behind Donald Trump. They don't all line up behind the majority leader, Thune. They don't even always seem to line up behind the American people who overwhelmingly want this thing to happen there. Thune has been saying, I'm just trying to be realistic here. We don't have 60 votes here. And I'm putting words in his mouth here, but to do the end around piece is something that is a little extreme and doesn't seem like he's all that interesting there. So the math part of it is what gets this thing very interesting here. And if Mike Lee's takeover, if indeed it's him, creates enough public fury, the pressure's going to move to those 53 Republicans there to use the nuclear option and change the rule to a simple majority. And Thune says he doesn't have the 51 votes to do even that. So it's not just a debate anymore. It's a test of endurance. And people like Sherrod Brown, Amy Klobuchar, to be on the record and fight against it. Stay up all night on national TV to explain why you won't vote for a bill that 70% of your people support. It's not about policy. It's about who blinks first. Should be a heck of a watch. Tuesday lunch specials at PetroServe USA. Hot beef sandwich in Valley City. At Harwood, scallop potatoes and ham. West Main Avenue meatloaf for mac and beef. 12th Avenue meatball sub. 205 NP Avenue tater tot hot dish. You can get that on 45th Street too. Chicken Alfredo in Castleton today. Over in Glendon, you get the chicken teriyaki. Whoppin' and cheesy beef potatoes and Cheyenne Chef's Choice over there. All kinds of good deals at PetroServe USA, helping America fuel better. Pleased to be joined on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line by Dr. Scott Bollier. He is an economist and dean of business at the University of Wyoming's School of Business. He previously served as dean of NDSU's College of Business and the head of the Chaley Institute at NDSU from 2016 to 2022. Good friend of mine and great to have him back on the show. Dr. Scott, how are you?
Hey, Steve. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Better now. It's great to hear your voice, my man. You been well?
Doing great. Thank you. Yep.
Great. So always interesting times when we go to war or conflict overseas, when you take a look at what that matters, what that means to us here at home. Generally speaking, from an economist's perspective, how does a war overseas affect our economy here at home? What are you seeing?
Yeah, it creates a lot of uncertainty, as you know, Steve, and the immediate reaction of higher oil prices is something that has happened time and again. I think the early hope or expectation of this was going to be really quick, and we might have the Strait of Hormuz open again quite quickly. It's looking like that's a little more complicated, but markets are settling down a bit and just digesting and accepting the news. You know, at home, you can expect potentially higher inflation if the war drags out. Customers tightening their belts and consumers in general tightening their belts a bit. The bigger issues at home right now, though, are, you know, economic growth was a little soft this past quarter. And then the uncertainty that I think everyone is feeling about AI and what it might mean for employment rates and future income.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about right now. You mentioned we might see some inflationary pressure here in the near term. Is that just because of oil prices, or are there other factors in there?
Yeah, there's a lot of different things at play. If you look at likely interest rate cuts, they're down to maybe one interest rate cut this year. So even before the war, producer price indices were up well above what people were expecting. There's just anticipation that the economy's been running pretty hot. The productivity gains from AI are there, but we're not actually seeing them as much as we would like in the price level. And, you know, you and I have been doing radio since COVID and even before. And there still is a bit of a hangover of policymakers have never been able to get back below their target of 2%. So are they moving the goalposts and accepting, you know, 3% inflation again? And that kind of difference has significant meaning for people who save or people on fixed income.
Yeah. Is wartime usually good or bad for the stock market? And is this war any different? And might things look differently because of what we're seeing happening in this particular situation?
It's a great question. You know, war in general is unproductive. You're moving resources into, you know, blowing things up and destroying, you know, so, I mean, its very nature is destructive. It's like lighting, you know, money on fire in some respects. That said, you know, the history of like these short, you know, it's generally not long war anymore in most cases. And these short skirmishes, markets are typically reacting quite severely in the short run. And then 6 months later, a year later, they're up significantly. So, you know, the little bit of, you know, downturn in the market the last couple of weeks could be something that is a buying opportunity. And, you know, it's really funny, just the new normal for people. We're off market highs by maybe 3%, and, you know, the sky is falling.
Yeah.
Even, you know, Trump is saying cut interest rates right now, you know, and it's like this is just a normal market correction, and we may be in a much better place in 6 months.
You talked about AI replacing human beings, and this is a fascinating subject to me because it really is. I don't know how many industrial revolutions we've had in our country, but this is the next one for sure. It seems to me that a lot of the people I visit with day-to-day are small business people, and they are much more reliant on human capital than they are of, okay, well, we've got 25 research analysts here at the firm, and we could, you know, have some AI tools take those places. It really seems as though small business, because of that, is going to be, I don't know if immune is the right word, but it's not going to affect small businesses quite as much as it is Wall Street. Because of that, is an AI fear of kind of replacing all of the people, is that overblown because of that, Scott?
Absolutely. See, I mean, you're a good historian. You know, again and again, there's been, you know, shocks to you know, innovations and shocks that have come with progress. And each time there's new technologies, there's new discoveries of jobs and things that we cannot imagine right now that are going to employ significant numbers of people. And in fact, over time, there's been more and more employment of people despite disruption and progress. And I think the same will be true with AI. We're not capable of wrapping our minds around what that would be, because if we were, we'd be rich and trying to do it ourselves, you know. So I think you're also correct that the small business owner is going to be providing face-to-face and in-person treatment, and that's something that's going to withstand the test of time to a significant extent. Here in our industry, where we're seeing it, is just these first-time college grads, you know, and they're trying to be relevant and set themselves apart, not only from everyone else, but from technology. And that's a really tall order. So there's been a significant uptick there in, you know, age 25 or under employment in this past academic cycle.
You and I had some a friendly, spirited debate, I guess you might call it, about the tariffs and when they went into place back last April and what that would do. And I know you were concerned about them being inflationary. I wasn't quite as concerned, and I think we were maybe both half right on that, because we did not see a big jump in ongoing inflation, yet whatever we had seemed to be fairly sticky. And we haven't been able to really crack that 2.4, 2.5. And I know that Powell and the other people in the Fed have talked about 2% as the target to, you know, trying to get to that. Is the 2% thing, Scott, as you take a look, is 2% sort of the holy grail that it's always been? Or might it be time for us in some way to take a look at, you know, 2.5, 2.6, 2.7 as being conducive enough to lowering interest rates that we can go ahead and move those rates down?
You know, inflation, you know, whether it's 2 or 3%, doesn't matter that much as long as there's predictability to it. So it's much more the variance for people as opposed to the rate. So if they wanted to raise the bar and be transparent in our range is 1 to 3% instead of 0 to 2%, I think people would adjust expectations and say, I have to get a little more return on my savings account. Employers would say, you know, we have to give slightly higher raises. And the effect would be about the same as 0 to 2% inflation. So I think that they still want to try to get back to that 0 to 2% rate, because interest rates, the real rate of interest, has been declining over time for a long time. We've had a great moderation where, thanks to capitalism and thanks to human progress and innovation, prices have been, you know, just really competitive for a long time. And I think there's a faith and a belief that they can get there. But you're right, the world, for a lot of reasons, post-2020 has gotten quite sticky.
Yeah, so. Yeah, for a lot of reasons, well said.
Yeah.
Hey, have you followed this trueflation measure? I hear Larry Kudlow talking about it all the time on Fox Business. It's kind of another way to calculate inflation. He says if you look at this trueflation metric, it shows that we're right around 1% in the real cost of everything. Have you taken a look at this at all, and what do you think about it?
No, I haven't. I haven't looked at it closely, but I think there's a point to it. You know, when you think about a lot of the things that we buy, particularly on the technology side, they're falling through the floor in terms of prices. And then one of the things that remains quite sticky is home prices, but home prices and rental. But there's just less actual activity in that market right now. So you and I probably aren't buying a home right now. You know, we're not renting. I'm a homeowner. And so that aspect of an inflationary calculation should be pretty muted. You know, so I get the argument that the basket of goods and services that we're actually buying isn't real representative right now. And it's quite possible that that for many people, inflation is less than the official statistics suggest.
Mm. Kevin Warsh looks like he's going to be the next Fed chair when Powell, his term is up. What is the overall economic community's perception of Kevin Warsh?
Generally pretty positive. You know, he has, you know, a training that goes back to Milton Friedman and the Chicago School. So someone who I think you and I would get along with pretty well. You know, he's been a little bit political the last year or so, you know, just being very pro-Trump. And I think you kind of have to be. But he's perceived as being a hair more hawkish than Powell, which is, you know, kind of surprising. Like, why did Trump appoint him if we're going to get a slightly more hawkish potential Fed chair. But I think he's going to be by the book and someone who is just taking the data into account and trying to responsibly run the economy. He's a good choice overall and has a long and distinguished career in the Fed. So I think that we'll generally look at him with high regard in a few years.
Dr. Scott, I've got to ask you before I let you go here today, the president's job up at North Dakota State University happens to be open right now, and you've been a gentleman who has been interested in college president's jobs in the past, at least one of them anyway. Are you have you applied for the NDSU president's job?
Oh, goodness. I'm just watching it like you and a spectator. I love my job here and having a lot of fun in Wyoming, so I'm curious to see what happens and cheering on the Bison this week, too.
Well, you're not
playing Michigan State, which is my team.
You know? Oh, okay.
So that's tough.
Okay.
Yeah, real tough.
You're not giving me anything here, Dr. Scott. interest? Can I ask, are you interested in the position at all?
It's a great, I mean, it's a great place and certainly miss it. But yeah, I'm just kind of hanging tight and having fun here.
All right. Fair enough. Well, we appreciate you being with us. Have you got a pick? Can NDSU spring an upset here over the Spartans on Thursday? What do you think?
It's tough. I've cheered on the Spartans for years and years, and they're a good team this year, but they're inconsistent. They can't shoot, you know. So if NDSU can play defense, it could be a really close game because the Michigan State Spartans are so inconsistent in the field.
Pack in a zone and make them try to make some threes, and don't let them get in transition. Got to take care of the ball. No turnovers. That'll kill you against that team. So
better send that along to Dave Richmond. There's our playbook
There you go. And next time we'll have to talk about the Bison football team coming out to the Mountain West, too, competing against your Wyoming Cowboys. So lots of good stuff going on.
We're excited about it. Yeah. We'll try to get back to the Fargo Dome this fall.
Well, there you go. All right. Scott, great to be with you. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Steve.
Dr. Scott, thanks for the time. Dr. Scott Bollier, Dean of the Business School at the University of Wyoming. Back with more after this. How did that woman sit in jail for 5 months and nobody knew about it? Well, he didn't say no, did he? Yeah, he's interested in the job. I don't know that. I don't know that. He's not told me anything off the record. But, I mean, if he would have, you know what? This is not for me. He would have been a little more... clear about that. He'd be a great president. I think the guy is a smart guy. He handles things well. He and I see economics a little differently. He was a little more bearish on the Trump tariffs. I don't know. He knows more than I do about stuff. My gut feeling was I just don't feel like it's going to be that guy. And here's the thing on tariffs, right? You only have a certain amount of money. So if the product that you want to buy is more expensive, you're either going to say no to it and buy something else, or you're going to say yes to that but say no to something else. So I think people have a certain amount of money, and if they're not buying as much product, then you've got more supply on the shelf and prices go down. The other thing is the importers were sucking up some of that. They're swallowing some of the price increases, and so it worked out more than I would have thought, but my gut feeling was I just didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal, and now it just isn't. We kept waiting and waiting and waiting, and Powell was way too slow to cut interest rates because of that. I like Dr. Scott. I think he's a smart guy and cares very much about NDSU, and what he did with that Challey Institute up there to get that off the ground, get going, is something they'll talk about for a long, long time. Hey, North Dakotans are some of the hardest workers in the country, but right now the state gets paid before your family does, taking a cut out of your hard-earned money before you ever see it. That's why Americans for Prosperity North Dakota is fighting to eliminate the state income tax entirely. It's time to put you back in control of every dollar you earn. No more letting the government take its cut first. You deserve the freedom to prioritize your family's future, not the state's budget. 9 other states have already eliminated their state income tax to attract jobs and families. It's time for North Dakota to do the same. Let's make North Dakota the clear choice for families and businesses by letting you actually keep what you earn. Visit AFPND.org to learn more and join the movement. That's AFPND.org, Americans for Prosperity. The GoFundMe for Angela Lips is up to $34,928. A local man named Michael Nessa did the GoFundMe on her behalf and put up a post basically telling her story. Their goal was $40,000 in the GoFundMe, and they are 88% of the way there already. I respect when they just say, hey, we're going to do a GoFundMe, and we're not trying to get rich off this thing, but we're trying to get some fairness here and basically make whole what was lost. And so they're asking for 40. They're not asking for 400 or 4 million or whatever, 40,000. I don't know what they're going to end up getting, but they're going to get to 40,000. No doubt about that. Somebody just gave $1,100 to this deal. And the story is told on this GoFundMe page from her perspective. And I'm going to read a minute of this for you. On July 14th, a team of U.S. Marshals showed up at my home while I was babysitting four young kids in Elizabethton, Tennessee. I've got three grown children and five grandchildren. I've never been to North Dakota or Minnesota, South Dakota, Iowa, or anywhere else near North Dakota. But the marshals arrested me at gunpoint, took me away. I had never had a gun pointed at me before. The poor children saw everything happen. It breaks my heart they were so scared. What I later learned after many days in jail is the police in Fargo, North Dakota had been investigating a bank fraud case. A woman used a fake military ID to steal tens of thousands of dollars from banks in Fargo. The cops ran surveillance footage through facial recognition software, and that AI software said it was me. A detective looked at my Tennessee driver's license and my social media and agreed. Nobody called me. Nobody asked a single question. They just got a warrant. I sat in a county jail in Tennessee for 108 days. They said I was a fugitive from justice. I had no bail. No one interviewed me. I just sat and waited. On October 30th, I was taken from the jail and flown to North Dakota. It was the first time I'd ever been on an airplane. I was terrified. They put a restraint device around my waist, handcuffed me, and walked me through the airport in front of everyone. Everyone was staring. I was terrified and exhausted and humiliated. I'll leave it there. You can go read the rest of it. It's a movie, you guys. It's a movie. And after 5 months in jail, she says later on Christmas Eve, the charges were dismissed. I was released into the North Dakota winter wearing summer clothes. No coat, no ride, no way home. Fargo police did nothing to help me. Local defense attorneys gave me money for a hotel room and food on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. And a local nonprofit founder, who we now know as Adam Martin from F5, drove me to Chicago. From there, I got a ride back home to Tennessee. No one from Fargo PD has apologized. It does feel to me, this is just a gut feel, but it sure seems like this is why the retirement speech is coming from Chief Cebulski. This looks so bad. And City Commission had a little hearing last night to, I think, basically just sort of figure out, okay, what are we in store for when the lawsuit comes? Because it's coming. And then they just released her. I guess it was West Fargo looked at the same stuff and said, we don't have enough here. But Fargo police kept. How did that woman sit in jail for 5 months and like nobody knew? Like, how did someone not get word of what happened and go to the media and say something? If half of what this woman is saying in the story is true, oh my gosh, what a victim. Hour two of the show coming up next. I will say this about the Angela Lipp story. I have learned over time to just wait a little bit before I completely make up my mind about a story. This one certainly seems at face value to be a massive ball drop or worse by Fargo PD, especially since West Fargo looked at it and said, look, there's not enough here. So I'm going to keep an open mind on this because how many times have I thought I knew the story and then something comes out later? And you say, oh, boy. So we'll see what happens there and what comes out. If you are able to catch the What's on Your Mind show with Scott Henin today, you will be glad that you did. Scott has just finished doing an interview with Dave Cebulski down at City Hall, and he'll be playing that for you today on his show. And Scott's going to ask all those questions, like, how did this happen? What did you see or think you saw that West Fargo didn't? How did this woman sit in jail for as long as she did and all those things? So stay tuned for the What's on Your Mind show. That should be Very interesting. She does not apparently have any kind of criminal record. I did a little homework on that over the top of the hour break here. I think I heard somewhere that she had been, you know, questioned on something in the past. All I'm saying is, you know, Nick Sandman, right, the Native American elder, and was the first one where it just really reminded me, be careful to draw conclusions when you don't know everything. We don't know everything on this one quite yet. I do hope there's a lawsuit. I hope that it goes to trial. I hope it goes to a legal proceeding so we can get everything out. I think that would be a good thing. So not that we need another court case, but you know what I mean. Hey, you can bid, my friend, on the PXG Lightning Driver and Zero Torque Putter Combo from PXG Thursday on our website. Doesn't matter where you live. You can be in Guam if you want to. You can bid on this one, am1100theflag.com. This is a $1,000 value for this driver-putter combo, but the bidding starts at only $200. And by the time we get to the end of the week, it's going to feel a lot like golf season in much of our part of the world here. So bidding starts Thursday at 7 a.m. You can find out more at the Big Deals page on our website, am1100theflag.com. Let's get to the key three. These are what I believe to be the three most consequential stories in the news cycle today. I could talk about the war, and I think that's valuable, certainly, and the fact that we are getting confirmation now from the IDC that Ari Larijani, basically the de facto leader of Iran, their political leader, was taken out in an overnight airstrike. So that's a big one. I could talk a lot about the Angela Lipp stuff. We could talk a lot about a bomb threat at the North Dakota State Capitol. But I'm going to put three stories that might not show up on your news feed in the key three slots here today. The first story is billionaire and Uber co-founder. Okay, so guy's got a lot of money. And he was one of the people that founded Uber. His name is Travis Kalanick. He has officially joined the exodus from California, revealing that he moved to Austin, Texas, just a few weeks ago before a proposed wealth tax could have targeted his estimated $3.6 billion fortune. This is from Fox Business. He said, just to be clear, I moved to Texas on December 18th. With Fox Business. And he said, there were people that were telling me that I should have moved to Florida because the weather's maybe a little better. But he said, hey, it was Texas for me. He left his San Francisco home for Texas just 14 days before the new year when the retroactive residency deadline for the proposed billionaire tax would take effect. He's not saying a whole lot about why he left. But he did make a comment on a social media page that I'm disappointed that I am having to move away from a movement that I poured my life into. So this is just more of you make it tough for money to stick around and money's not going to stick around. And when Gavin Newsom says, hey, I got this great idea to pay for all of our social experiments, our theories, let's do a wealth tax where we just take a one-time scoop of everybody's money. And people like Travis Kalanick are going to say, no, thank you. Story number one. Story number two. You have probably heard by now, probably ad nauseum, that the Congress is not able to get through a spending bill to fund Homeland Security. Sean Duffy, the transportation secretary, tells Fox News Channel that more than 300 TSA agents have already left the job. DHS has been partially shut down for more than 30 days. And so more than 300 TSA agents have quit. Now, they still have a few more, right? And there's 50,000, I looked it up, of the agents that are working at security checkpoints across the country. But 300 is still not way more than one or two. And the government is trying to put the funding in place to keep all these people around. A DHS spokesperson told Fox Business that 100,000 DHS workers, so there's, you know, obviously more than the gate agents. You got the security people, the administrative people. But 100,000 DHS workers went without their first full paycheck last week, and that's $1 billion in unpaid wages each month. And if you want to talk about, you know, how much of a slowdown do we need before it starts affecting economic numbers, consumer spending? Well, I would think $1 billion in unpaid wages probably checks the box. And number three, I don't even know if this is a news story, but you got to know about this, okay? You have to know about this. Nick Shirley is at it again. And he yesterday published his trip to California. And his social media post says, here's the full 40 minutes of my crew and I exposing California fraud. Minnesota was big, but California is even bigger. We uncovered more than $170 million in fraud. This is just what he found. As these fraudsters live in luxury with no sequences. Like it and share it, the fraud must stop. We all work way too hard, pay too much in taxes for this to be happening. These fraudsters have been able to defraud American taxpayers for years without any pushback from politicians and, yes, the public. It's time to expose it all. I believe that we are in a period because we're, A, finding out about it, documenting it, and then because we care and we're digging into it, I think we're in a period of time in our country where we can call this 2026 is the year of fraud in our country. There is a fraud crisis in our nation, no question about it. And coming up here in the best thing I heard all day, President Trump is going to talk about that. And I thought President Trump dropped a couple of fantastic truth bombs, I'll call them for lack of a better term, about what's happening with fraud in our country. Minnesota has been in the crosshairs, no doubt about it, but you're seeing this all over. And if we could, you know, what kind of fraud do you suppose really does exist in California? New York, Illinois. We haven't even talked about any of those. Seattle and Washington. North Dakota. I mean, right, there's fraud everywhere, right? You'd like to think that in certain states, we're not trying to orchestrate it from the top levels of the government, which I don't have any proof on this, obviously, but it sure feels like there's some of that going on. But good job, Nick Shirley. That guy is going to go down as an American hero for just asking the questions, making people answer for what he is seeing. Hey, if you're thinking about a new era for you where you're not afraid to smile, take pictures, Dr. Matt Eaton at Dakota Implant and Sedation Center would love to talk to you. He's got extensive advanced training in implant dentistry. He uses 3D imaging, digital planning, and in-house technology, and every smile is carefully planned before treatment even starts. Many patients walk out the same day with a strong, natural-looking full smile. Compassionate team, comfortable experience, financing options available. If you've been told implants take months, it might be time for a second opinion. Dakota Implant and Sedation Center in Fargo, dakotaimplant.com. Smile like you mean it. When we come back, best thing I heard all day, President Trump bringing the truth and bringing it strong, a whole bunch of it in just one 30-second statement. We'll play that for you next. Coming to you live from the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton, 15 minutes or less. Gets you a beautiful new or wonderful pre-owned car, truck, or SUV. Check them out, drivewithvision.com, drivewithvision.com. Willie in Fargo wants to jump on the show today, and he calls us on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Good morning, Willie. How are you?
Good morning. Wanted to talk about Nick Shirley. Is that the same Nick Shirley that went to Ukraine and took videos of like this really well-off street with people with Mercedes to make it look like Ukrainians are embezzling money? Is it that Nick Shirley?
I don't know. I've not seen him in Ukraine. I just saw the stuff out of Minnesota.
Oh, is it the same Nick Shirley that paid illegal aliens to stand in front of the White House with Biden signs? He paid them $20 each. Is it that Nick Shirley?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess the thing I'm saying is that it's the Nick Shirley that pointed out what's happening in Minnesota. And, you know, the great journalists at MSNBC, 60 Minutes, New York Times, I mean, none of them did the reporting that this guy did. Now, some of them tried. For whatever reason, Nick Shirley caught lightning in a bottle with his social media feed and people started paying attention. But he did what other people wouldn't do and went and did that. I don't know what he's done in a past life. And I can listen to the argument that, well, okay, if he's done something in the past that hasn't exactly been on the up and up, can we trust him in this case? Well, you might not like what he did before. Maybe he wasn't trustworthy then. I don't know. Maybe he found Jesus. Maybe he said, you know, I got to do it better going forward. But you can't say just because I hear this a lot from people who, like, if I say I read this article in the New York Post, people will say, oh, New York Post, that's a tabloid. It's a, you know, sleazy rag or whatever. Well, I'm like, okay, but they're quoting data points. I'm not necessarily going by all their reporting. I'm saying they're talking about this happened, that happened, whatever, that's empirical data that's on the record. So you might not like how it's delivered, but if the information is solid, then the information is solid. And we can litigate what somebody did a long time ago if you'd like, but it doesn't do any good because nobody is refuting what he did in Minnesota. 22 past the hour, time for best thing I heard all day. Best thing I heard all day. President Trump had a 30-second statement yesterday talking about some of the fraud that's going on around the country. And, of course, in Minnesota, this has been talked about quite a bit. And so Nick Shirley, to the point about Nick Shirley, what has happened with him now going to Minnesota and then California, he is single-handedly responsible for, well, not single-handedly, his partner in crime, David, in Minnesota was a big help to do that, but give him the lion's share of the credit for exposing the horrific fraud that's going on and enlightening us on this era of fraud that we've got going on. It's a crisis, no question about that. And so eternally thankful for this guy, just a cell phone and a hoodie, right? It's got all he had with him. He didn't have credentials. He just said, let me go see what's going on here. And thank goodness that he did. But President Trump had a little something to say about all this fraud yesterday. And I think this is fantastic. And, of course, he lit up Minnesota. He's been doing that a lot, and I'm so thankful that somebody's talking about Minnesota.
A lot of it has to do with Somalia. Nobody's calling out anybody, but a lot of it has to do, but it's Somalia and plenty of others. And I believe the governor is complicit. I believe Ilhan Omar is complicit. I believe that your attorney general is complicit. And if they are, you're going to hopefully find out about it, and you're going to be... You're going to have to do what you have to do. If we found half of the fraud that's taking place in this country, and I think you have a chance of doing that, we would have much more than a balanced budget. Mm. That's the kind of numbers you're talking about. The theft is incredible.
The theft is incredible. There's a lot there in about 30 seconds. I am so glad to see the continued light being shown on what's happening in Minnesota after the ICE stuff just got very weird down there in a hurry. And I was wondering, we got a war going on, obviously. We've got oil prices. We got an economy to talk about. There's so much to talk about. And I've been hoping all along that President Trump wouldn't stop talking about Minnesota. We need to keep putting the pressure on there. We need arrests. We need people being led away in handcuffs. If they can prove it. And I don't know. You don't know. We hear a lot. We see a lot. It seems a certain way. But you're going to need the proof. You're going to need the proof that Ellison, Omar, Walz knew about it. Sure seems like that would be the case. But if we don't have proof, we don't have proof. Okay? And I'm very glad to see the president continuing to put the pressure on Minnesota fraud after ICE. Because you just wondered. This was obviously a huge distraction. And you can ask questions about the timing, but I've said all along, if the president doesn't give up on this, you can have some distraction for a while, but you better go back to it. And he certainly is. And I love the fact that he's still talking about this. And, you know, Tim Walz drops out of the reelection, so you got to think, okay, there might be something to pin on him. Keith Ellison, Ilhan Omar, don't know, but I hope so. And I'm glad to see him continuing to raise the temperature there. Second thing is that comment that he made at the end. If the fraud could be completely found, how much of the national debt could be wiped away if you were just able to reclaim that money? You know, if you could find half of it, President said, you might be able to get rid of the whole debt. How much could the federal government budget be slashed going forward? We've got so much money going so many places. And yes, a lot of it was COVID money, but a lot of it is just a plain old spending. You allocate massive amounts of money to a million different things. Well, how closely with that much money and that many people with their hands in the cookie jar, how carefully can you really look at that? If the president can accomplish something in this area before he leaves office of just setting up some accountability. Now, it's tough because the money goes to the states. Federal money goes to the states, which maybe there's a conversation, too. Let's have a lot less federal money going to the states. Maybe have the states take care of their own stuff. But when your money and mine is going to California, Minnesota, Illinois, New York, wherever, you got to have some accountability. You got to have some reporting there. And when government is so big as it is now, it's just hard to keep track of all that. There is so dang much going on there. If we didn't have people stealing our money, how different would things be in our country financially? The scale of this stuff is absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. And this has been going on in Minnesota and California and likely other states over and over and over. Nobody wants to investigate. Nobody wants to turn over the spending records. We just had a story on this earlier. Alpha News told us that a report on Medicaid, basically saying that one out of every four Minnesotans is getting Medicaid, but they can't provide the reporting to document that. I mean, listen to what I'm telling you on this. 1.5 million Minnesotans are on Medicaid? Really? Well, that's how many are getting money. Do they need the services? We need a lot more questions being asked. I'm thankful there are people like Nick Shirley out there to expose it and people like President Trump who don't seem to want to give up on the fight to expose it. That's amazing stuff. Here at Fieldstone Group, we're very excited to bring to town Stacey Manning, and Stacey's a co-author of a book called Raising a Conservative in a Woke City. She's coming to town for a special event that we're hosting at Capstone Classical Academy Saturday, March 28th. We got a VIP meet and greet at 6 o'clock, appetizers served, and then the main presentation will be at 7 o'clock today. And we all know that parents today have a tough job. Parents have always had a tough job, right? But, oh my gosh, all the culture issues in our society today. And there are so many voices that are in the ears and the minds of our kid about the woke ideology, the trans topics, protests about what's going on across the country. And whether we like it or not, the woke culture is screaming its beliefs to our kids every single day. So how do we as parents, and I would say grandparents too, we can play a part in this. How do we help our kids understand this better? How do we have these conversations? Well, Stacey Manning is going to be in town to help us with that, and she's been very kind to join us here on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Stacey, good morning to you. Great to have you on the show today.
Good morning. The pleasure is mine. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Well, I'm so excited to hear from you. My friend Alyssa, who works here at our building, came to me with this idea a while ago and said, I heard about this book. It's fantastic. And we need to get Stacey here. And I said, let's find a way. And here we go. In just a couple weeks, you'll be here. So we're so excited to have you here. Have you ever been in North Dakota or Fargo at all, Stacey?
I never have. I'm really looking forward to it, actually. I hope to take a hot yoga class when I'm in town. So if you have any suggestions, let me know.
Yeah, we like hot things this time of year. It's supposed to be warming up, but winter is still hanging on a little bit. Hopefully, though, by the end of March on the 28th, we'll have some nice warm weather to share with you. Stacey, I'm so excited to hear your story. I just want to know how all this began. You wrote this book along with a friend of yours named Katie. What inspired you to write this book?
Our success in raising between us seven conservative kids, I've still got one in the hopper, but after the government response to the COVID nightmare here in Washington State, which was absolutely dystopian, we both noticed that not only were our kids fine and actually thriving, but so many of our conservative friends' children were hanging on just fine. And with all the horror stories that we were privy to with our kids' friends in the public school and how detrimental it was to them, we thought, gosh, what is it that we've done? You know, how is it that our kids are, like, blowing it off, keeping their own counsel, and still keeping on without being so devastated? And we realized that they've been raised conservative. They've been raised conservative Christian, but really in the face of a public school environment, they knew what the truth was. They knew how to seek the right counsel. They knew how to seek out information and stand firm in the truth. And we wanted to share it. It really was a fun project to write. Katie and I enjoy writing together. This is our second book. Our first was Them Before Us, Why We Need a Global Children's Rights Movement that explores all the ways that we are sacrificing the rights of children on the altar of adult desire.
Wow.
It's good stuff. And this one was, like, kind of fun. We got to tell stories about our kids and champion them. We have a little fun because it can be light. It doesn't have to be a dire slog. We have to remember as parents, we have the luxury of fighting an intellectual battle with this generation. And most of our kids live and thrive. So focusing on the positive and showing you how we did it, we hope we can be of service to parents across the nation.
Yeah, it sounds great. In the book, you talk about the importance of getting to our kids first. Tell us about that.
There's something called the Founders Principle, and it means essentially that the first person that your kid gleans information from or seeks information from, that person's going to be the person they return to when they have further questions. And, you know, that might be porn on Johnny's phone during recess or passing time, or that might be a YouTuber who is seducing them into the transgender ideology. That's why you need to be the first person to introduce all of these topics to your kids so that they can be sure you are the person to consult when they need further information.
You talk a little bit about having age-appropriate conversations with your kids about these cultural movements there. What kinds of discussions should we be having with our kids and maybe our grandkids too when it comes to what happens at home?
Well, you know, sadly, the culture is not going to pull any punches, and we can't either. I wish I'd looked up who said it, but they were so right when they said it's better a year early than 5 minutes too late. You know your kids. The beautiful thing about your children is that they are the perfect children for you, designed by God for your family, and you have the best and clearest insight into what they can handle and when they can handle it and how they can handle it. Getting to your kids first means that they come home to you when they need more information.
You know, Stacey, it occurs to me that when we're talking about these things, it's one thing to talk about, you know, something like, law enforcement. Well, you know, we need to have police because they help keep us safe, and there has to be a place for bad people to go. They have to take a time out. I mean, those things are a little easier to talk to our kids about than maybe like the trans ideology. A lot of our kids, we haven't even really maybe talked a lot about sexuality with our kids, and now we're talking about these aberrant, lifestyle things. Some of these conversations can be really overwhelming for parents to have. How do we start, and how do we make it easy? And maybe what age do we even begin these conversations with our kids?
You know, there's not a tried and true, this is the age for this kid, because all kids are so incredibly different. My middle, my daughter, I think I I assigned her the Hunger Games series when she was like in second grade, because she was capable and a voracious reader. And it spawned so many conversations about like how DC and Hollywood really do look like capital city and how beautiful it was that the heroine Katniss Everdeen of the book didn't rely on girl boss stuff, but her mind and her ability with tools to be successful instead of, you know, unrealistic picture of what womanhood actually looks like. That book would have been too much for my eldest at that same age. So, you know, sometimes you're going to wander into minefields that are a bit too much. You can always retreat. You can always sit down together and, like, watch a PragerU video, for example, if you don't feel like you have the equipment or the information really mastered, and learn along with your kids. I know that there's a lot of people that have come out of a fugue and realized that the culture has gone completely insane and they don't know where to begin, or maybe they feel like they've not programmed or equipped their kids to this point, and it's just too late. But it's never too late. You and your kid can embark on an education together by informing one another, watching things together, reading things together, asking questions, discussing the topics as information seekers in a partnership. It doesn't always have to be a, you know, you sit, you listen, I speak situation.
Yes. Yeah. We're visiting with Stacey Manning. She's co-author of the book Raising a Conservative in a Woke City, and she's coming into Fargo Saturday, March 28th for a special community event at Capstone Classical Academy. And we're having this conversation live in the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. So I have to ask, Stacey, are there some topics that probably are not appropriate for our kids, or is everything on the table depending on age and maturity?
Everything is on the table because, you know, like I said, the culture is not going to pull any punches. They've, you know, got the transgender beaver. Was it in Blue's Clues? I'd have to look back at which particular show it was in, with mastectomy scars for very young children. Nothing is safe when it comes to what the entertainment machine is putting out there for kids. They're going to come across this stuff. And it doesn't mean that you need to explain to a five-year-old what a vaginoplasty is, but talking about how God made men and women, and they are wonderfully made, and the world is telling lies about the possibility of girls becoming boys and boys becoming girls, and we need to keep an eye out for those lies because boys and girls are made in wonderfully different ways, and just because a girl might be a little bit more like a tomboy and more like your brother doesn't make her a boy. It makes her a wonderfully made girl. She's an individual. Hmm. And that's it. You don't have to go into any of the potential sexual fetish aspects of it or what gender dysphoria is. Just, you know, the truth is the truth, sweetheart, and we need to be vigilant and love people for who they are, even if they don't.
Absolutely. I have, just by the way, friends, I have a pair of tickets for the show coming up on March 28th that I'm going to give away here. Let's do caller number 5, Addison. Can we do caller number 5 to 701-271-1100 if you'd like to see, go attend the event with Stacey coming up March 28th at Capstone Classical Academy. Caller number 5 at 701-271-1100. Stacey, how can parents, I've just got about another 30 seconds left, but how can parents you just start the conversation with, I'm getting too close to the end of it. I better not ask you another question or I'm going to end up rushing you at the end. But there's a lot more to talk about, and Stacey's going to be with us here March 28th at Capstone Classical Academy. There's a VIP meet and greet at 6 o'clock. Appetizers served. Main presentation starts at 7 o'clock. And we hear this so often. when we do these events. People come, they say, oh, it's just, it feels so good to be with people like me who don't have to be worried. Can I be, am I going to get shamed by asking these questions? It's great to come together and learn and be challenged and encouraged. And that's exactly what you'll get on March 28th. Go to am1100theflag.com. am1100theflag.com for tickets. Stacey, thank you so much for your time. Look forward to meeting you here in a couple of weeks.
Me too. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Take care. You too. All right, Steve Alsup Show back after this. Congressman Joel H., who will be going to the Stacey Manning event. He was caller number 5. Appreciate you listening, Joel. Appreciate everybody that called in. Sorry we didn't have more to give away, but I wanted to make sure that we got a couple of tickets out here today on the show. It's going to be a really good time. And for what the cost is, I think the VIP tickets are $75. Chance to meet Stacey, get a picture, some appetizers, and best seats in the house. Absolutely. That's a no-brainer right there. So I hope that a lot of people will be able to take advantage of that. All right. Wanted to give you a little bit of a additional nugget on the Angela Lips story. Emailer Dan, who happens to be a defense attorney, said, Angela Lips' own words are the reason she sat for 5 months in jail. She said, I refuse to waive extradition. Extradition isn't about whether you're guilty or innocent. It's not even about mistaken identification for the crime charge. It's only about whether you're the person the other state wants. North Dakota asked Tennessee for the right Angela Lip, even if North Dakota had mistakenly identified her as a suspect in the case. The only place to fight the charge was in North Dakota, which Ms. Lip's attorney did in just a few days. Had she waived extradition in Tennessee immediately, she would have been in North Dakota by July. And if God had blessed her with the same talented attorney, she likely would have been cleared at home. She lost her home, her dog, and her car. When Ms. Lip sues Fargo and even Cass County, one of the issues when it comes to the damages she suffered will be whether she did anything to make the damages worse. Fighting extradition did just that. Okay, thanks for the perspective on that. Perspective on buying a car or a truck or an SUV is done by considering Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. Have you noticed how many Vision Fords and Lincolns you're seeing here in the metro? I've got one of them, and now I know why people love them, because they make everything easy. The service, the sale, the paperwork, everything is easy. 18 service drivers to get you to your car or your car to you for the service visits. And when it comes to oil changes, pretty easy and pretty quick to do that. They will come right to you and get the oil change there. Buy your Ford from Ward, our good friend Ward Cater down there. DriveWithVision.com. Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. DriveWithVision.com. 52 past the hour here. Scott Hannon coming up next. He is going to have an interview with Fargo Police Chief Dave Zabolski coming up today. He did the interview just a couple minutes ago. I saw him walking through the hall here a minute ago. And that's going to be a good one. And Scott's going to ask all those questions we've been asking. And the chief didn't want to talk about them much at the press conference announcing his retirement. So I'm glad that he's taken the opportunity to do that today. I think that's a good thing. There is new data out from a payroll processor called ADP saying what the take-home pay is for people in our country. And depending on what state you live, you could have a fair amount of your salary coming home with you, or you could be giving it to somebody in the government there. So the worst state as far as state taxes for your take-home pay, Oregon. Your $75,000 paycheck will result in $54,000, almost $54,895 in take-home pay. So you lose about $20,000 of your money. This is for a single filer standard deduction in 2025. Number two is Maine, just over $56,000 you get to take home. Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia, is the third worst offender, $56,374. state of Minnesota checks into the top five. Not a surprise, 56,521. Not sure how much that's going to Al-Shabaab or to Lamborghinis for your favorite new American, but you get some of that there. Now, that's not completely fair. To some people that have entered the country in recent generations, we're just seeing a little bit of that. Hawaii, 56,557. Those are your top five. The best five states are Alaska, where you get to take home 61,149. That's the best. Florida's next. And with as many people going to Florida, you wouldn't think, right? But 61,149. Although I guess with Florida, a lot of it you're paying in your local taxes of things, not your paycheck, necessarily your federal and your state there. Nevada, third best, 61,149. New Hampshire, number four, 61,150. And South Dakota, the same, 61,150. The rest of the top 10 go Tennessee, 6, Texas, 7, Washington. Oh, that's a surprise. Washington, 8, Wyoming, 9, North Dakota, 10. So we live in one of the 10 best states as far as take-home pay. We'll take it, right? All right, stay tuned. Scott Henn, the What's On Your Mind program coming up next is exclusive with Dave Zabolski coming up in just a few minutes. Have a great day, my friend, and keep on flying that flag.